I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. I am offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there as Mississippi's lone libertarian voice. Today's Tuesday. Next hour, we'll get into a little bit of Tech Tuesday news. I'll just save it. I don't have a whole lot to tease, but there is some interesting stuff going on in the world of technology, some things they want to roll out on humanity that I don't think we're quite ready for. So we'll talk about that. And there's a bit of a lesson in that segment today. Don't fall in love with people in the public eye. We have a bad problem with that here in the United States. And I'm sure this is also another worldwide phenomenon. Obviously, this has happened throughout all of time. But people just really, we really invest ourselves in other people. We see them as a hero and we try to reject everything that might say that they're not. But when it comes to the tech world, I think there's some words of caution for some of our tech overlords in falling too deeply in love with them. This might have been able to have been in the tech segment, because it's kind of a non sequitur to the show, but I found this very interesting yesterday. I got an email from Netflix. Now, it is to my great shame that Netflix won the standoff between Netflix and Mike Madison. I canceled my Netflix account probably 2 years ago, wasn't watching it much, and I've been waiting ever since for anything from Netflix to woo me back. I originally thought maybe they'd give me a free month, and that was not forthcoming. So I reduced my expectations and thought, if they just gave me 2 free weeks, I'll come back. There was some stuff on Netflix I wanted to see. And still nothing came. And this battle of wills, of which Netflix was not even aware, lasted for about 18, 20 months, and I couldn't believe it. You know, this is one of the great ways to save money, is to play this system. I've said this before. One of the greatest ways to get 10% off just about anything you buy is to go to a website, fill up your cart with a bunch of stuff, and then exit the site. Leave it. In many, many cases, within the next 24 to 48 hours, you're going to get an email. Hey, we noticed you forgot something. Would 10% off get you to go ahead and check out this cart? So there's all kinds of ways. I like to try to play these games just to see where we can save money. Netflix did not blink. And so I finally did just resubscribe to Netflix. As I said, there was some stuff on there that I wanted to see. And so I popped for the $12 a month to get into Netflix. But I get an email from them yesterday that I thought was pretty interesting. Does Netflix think we're stupid? Netflix recently posted that their subscribers had gone up. They've been having some trouble. I think Netflix stock is down 70% from its all-time highs. Certainly, they were the industry leader in kind of on-demand entertainment. But now you've got Hulu and HBO Max and Prime Video. I mean, there's just a ton of competition in the space. And without contracts on these things, people just flip-flop back and forth of them. And one thing that they do is they share accounts. This is particularly if you've got kids. And in my case, you can have an account and a kid goes off to college. Well, they've still got the password. They've still got a profile. And so instead of picking up another Netflix account, they just continue to use your account when they're gone. Netflix does not like this. And I think they've cracked down to some degree, but my kids are not on my plan any longer. They're on their mom's plan, I believe. But I just thought this was kind of interesting. So I get this advertisement. I guess this is what you'd call it. From Netflix, it says, new. Introducing profile transfer. Do you want to allow profile transfers? And then it addresses me. Dear Mike, We added a new feature that lets anyone using your account keep all the things they love about Netflix if they create a new account. And it says, people move, families grow, relationships change. Now people on your account can transfer a profile, including recommendations, viewing history, my list, save game settings, and more, to their own membership that they pay for. This is a feature for other people using your Netflix. Allowing this feature will not sign out other devices on your account or block anyone out. There's no charge for allowing this feature. So they're not going to charge me for booting somebody off my account and making them start to pay for a brand new account. I just found this kind of interesting. Maybe I'm missing something in this. Is this some great deal? Somebody's using my account for free right now, but they can have all the features of Netflix if they just stop piggybacking my account and go open up their own account. Well, yeah, duh, that's what a Netflix account is. I just found this interesting and a bit of a sign of the times. Inflation is stealth in a lot of different areas. I know that some of the subscription services that I've had before that started at about $6.99 are now $12, $16.99 a month. This is big inflation just over the past few years. I've talked about the fact that you used to be able to get cash back at Kroger, zero charge. You need cash back? Sure, $40. Here you go. Now it's 50 cents. From zero to 50 cents, that's big. And if you're only taking out $20 in cash because you just needed a little coin to hand to a kid or something like that, that's a substantial increase. There's all kinds of these little inflationary things that are there, and this is Netflix inflating away some of your piggyback accounts. Anyway, I found it kind of interesting. They're really trying to sell this like a great benefit to their program there. I've got a weird clip of the day today, or a quote of the day today. And this was put out from someone to reference this particular part of a movie. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Apocalypto. This is one of my favorite movies of all times. Now, I can't remember if for some reason I'm not supposed to like it. I believe this was a Mel Gibson production, and I don't know. It's an old movie. But it is. I believe there's no English in it whatsoever. The entire thing is subtitled, and it is about the Mayans, I believe, in Central America. I think it is one of the best done movies. I'm not a subtitle guy. There's a couple of movies out there right now. My son has been telling me to watch some very popular movies, but they're subtitled, and sometimes I just don't have the energy. But Apocalypto is a movie I would recommend, full of action, and I just think it is a great movie. But the reason they brought this particular clip up when I saw it listed on a website was this advice from a father to his son, the top warrior in one of the tribes, speaking to his son. And again, this is subtitled, so I'll play the clip in the background, but I will have to narrate the subtitles from this thing. They run across another tribe in the jungle. And this tribe is very meek and mild. They were kind of hiding in the woods. And the tribe run by this warrior and his son were on alert because they saw other people near them. You know, there was a lot of war and danger from other tribes. But as this tribe that was trespassing on their lands came into view, it was apparent there were a lot of children. They all looked very sad, all looked very beaten up, emasculated men, frightened women. And they're going back. So the warrior and his son are going back with some of the other warriors back to the camp, back to their tribal headquarters. And the father warrior says, don't speak of this interaction with this other tribe. They let them cross across the land. They said, we're just trying to... Said the tribe said, our land was ravaged. We're trying to just make our way. Can we cross across your land? We're trying to find a new start. The young warrior says he wants to go back and tell everybody at this warrior's tribe that these people have encroached on their territory and the fact that they looked like they had been beaten up. And the father says, don't tell anybody in our tribe about this encounter in the forest. And the son is very put off with it. But the father does not want fear to spread through his tribe is the reason. a long, maybe very convoluted setup. I don't know if this is good for radio, but I find it fascinating exactly what he says. When you think about the political manipulation of people, this is why I bring this to the show. Our entire politics is based on fear. Fear of the other side, fear of Russia, fear of COVID, fear, fear, fear. You've got to have fear. And this is what the tribal elder, this guy's father, says. He says, these people in the forest, what did you see on them? Son says, I don't understand. He says, fear. Deep, rotting fear. They were infected by it. Did you see? Fear is a sickness. It will crawl into the soul of anyone who engages it. It has tainted your peace already. I did not raise you to see you live with fear. Strike it from your heart. Do not bring it into our village. At first light, we will gather with the elders and get their advice. I just found that very powerful. It's very true. We have allowed in our society for fear to capture us. And this is a manipulated fear. This is fear that comes to us from above to always keep us in a heightened state of alarm. Doesn't matter if it's COVID, if it's Russia, if it's China. It doesn't matter what it is, global climate change. They've got to keep you constantly in fear so that they can pose themselves as the saviors. But fear is the disease itself. And it affects us. Now, I could be accused here of stoking fear as I lay down the facts of particularly what's bubbling under the facade of our fake economy. But I just bring you facts. There will be difficult times for some people. But almost every time I cover it, I say, if you understand what is going on, you could possibly do quite well. Great fortunes are made during times of crisis. And if you're preparing, if you prepare yourself, if you're conservative now, if you're not accumulating more debt, if you're socking away some money for any possible lean times, then you could be better suited to weather the storm. You know, I've talked about interest rates in the housing market yesterday. I don't fear 17% home interest loan rates. I want them because I know it may be an opportunity for me to pick up some really cheap real estate in the future. Because I understand what's going on, and I can prepare for that. And if collectively we as a country understood what was happening and why, we could make better choices going forward so it doesn't happen to us again, and we leave this mess to our kids. You know, I talk about stuff in the food and nutritional deficiencies that are making people sick. That's not fear-mongering. It's information to make better choices so you can avoid these health pitfalls or fix the problems that you may have yourself. It's about empowerment. You know, I didn't warn about the shots because I wanted to scare people. I simply knew there was no long-term safety testing, and that isn't normal. So waiting with what we know right now about who is really even at danger of COVID, which is basically people that are significantly immunocompromised, morbidly obese, or the extremely elderly, was a prudent thing to do, to wait and find out. And those warnings from the brave doctors and scientists who spoke up and I relayed their message probably saved hundreds of thousands of millions of lives. Not me, them. But fear is what they use. They do it with COVID. They're doing it with Russia. They do it with climate change, China, Iran, Democrats, Republicans, whites, blacks. People in charge use this fear, this infectious fear. No greater example than COVID for sure. But my intention here is to inform people. More knowledge you have, the less fear you should have. That's the case in just about everything. When I come back, I'm going to do it again. We're going to talk a little bit about the bond market. There was an interesting story, and one thing I've kind of left out of the problem that we're facing right now with rising interest rates that I don't think people understand, but it's incredibly important, so we'll get to that when I come back. Salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the wise side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. I'll be honest with you. I don't like political theater stuff. It's really so uninteresting to me. I'm not part of the two-party system, so I can't do tribal talk on this radio show. I'm fascinated by economic issues. I would probably love to do financial news just about every day. I know that's almost impossible to do. And there's commentary from a libertarian perspective. There's plenty of things that go on in the news that there's not anywhere else in central Mississippi a libertarian perspective. And I don't profess to be like a spokesperson for libertarianism. I just kind of give you my view on it and why I'm checked out of the system, that I can see the evil and the problems on both sides of the aisle. So I enjoy commenting on those things. But the financial stuff is so important. I couldn't really pull off 2 hours a day of financial news anyway, even if it was interesting, because I'm still learning these things, too. It's just I probably understand more than 98% of most Americans, because we have an economic illiteracy problem here. And this is going to be a problem going into a crisis. And so I wanted to explain a little stuff. If you want to really kind of understand in good layman terms, Peter Schiff has got a show. He's a libertarian Republican. Ran for Senate in Connecticut, I think it was, a while back. He's a fan of gold and sound money. He's an Austrian economist. He's got mutual funds if you want to buy his funds. But he's got a great podcast where he explains economic issues, I think, in a very good layman way. Wealthion's a good YouTube channel. There's an interview with a guy from the Federal Reserve. He was a former trader with the Federal Reserve. And I'll be honest with you, when I saw him and they started discussing who he was, I almost tuned out. I was like, last thing I want to hear right now is anybody that's had anything to do with the Federal Reserve. But it was very interesting. He talked about some tools the Federal Reserve has. He called it monetary duct tape. Now, this is what the Fed's been using for the past 14 years. It's just Band-Aids on gaping wounds, and this is why we are still so sick economically. But he said they've got more tools that they will roll out. It will not stop a crisis, but it may push it back for a few more months. So the timing of these things is always very odd. But I believe people need to really understand some of the foundations of our economic system to make better decisions for themselves and to hold politicians accountable. If we ever hope to get out of this mess and hand our children a better functioning country, a solvent country, we've got to stop saying Bidenflation. You just have to. Because what you're doing is you're giving a pass. You are taking all of the blame for this incredible debt-fueled mess we have right now, and trying to act like this one geriatric mental patient, if we just get rid of him, it's over. And it's just simply not the case at all. Does Joe Biden make inflation worse? Yes. You know who else made inflation worse? Donald Trump. And before him, Barack Obama. And before him, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Reagan. I mean, during Reagan's term, he crushed some inflation, and then he went right off to huge government spending. But I wanted to explain something else that's going on right now. It's very, very interesting. I guess I'll read this story first. The bond market is enduring its worst sell-off in a generation. I've told you many times the bond market has had a 40-year bull market. 40 years of bull market, meaning an uptrend in the bond market. It's finally ending. The bond market is enduring its worst sell-off in a generation, triggered by high inflation and the aggressive interest rate hikes that central banks are implementing. Falling bond prices, in turn, mean paper losses on the massive holdings that the Fed and others accumulated during their rescue efforts in recent years. Rate hikes also involve central banks paying out more interest on their reserves that commercial banks park with them. That's tipped the Fed into operating losses, creating a hole that may ultimately require the Treasury Department, translation, taxpayers, to fill via debt sales. The UK Treasury is already preparing to make up a loss at the Bank of England. I've been telling you for years and years now, the Fed is writing checks and you're the collateral. They talk about, well, the Fed's independent. It's not a government agency, Mike. Well, it's a quasi-government institution owned by big banks, and we're on the hook for all of their mistakes. And boy, there's plenty of them. But let me explain to you One of the other things, so I've talked about rising interest rates and the problems with that. The debt market is the most important in the world. Few people understand that. The stock market is like the debt market's puny little brother. But we all pay attention to the S&P. And I've explained the trap that the Federal Reserve and our government are in right now with higher interest rates. We've already gone from paying $350 billion a year in interest on the debt to now we're on track to pay around $700 billion interest on the debt. And this is just the beginning. Most of the debt that we still have on the at the U.S. Treasury is still got small interest rates on it. But as that debt rolls over to these higher interest rates, that's going to keep going. We're going to be paying over $1 trillion just in interest on the debt very soon, probably in the next 6 to 12 months. $1 trillion. And then inflation is also raising expenses to the federal government. It's raising wages. Social Security just had its largest cost of living adjustment ever that's going to take place next year. I think it's 8.7%. That's more money that the federal government needs, which will put further pressure on the government spending, which means it's going to have to take out more debt, which means higher interest payments, which means, anyone, more debt. This is the debt doom loop that we are entering right now. You understand what I'm saying? Inflation makes everything higher. Interest rates going up makes everything more expensive to the government. So they need to go out and find more money. They need to borrow more money because the debt has made, the debt payments are making things more expensive. So they borrow more money, which adds to the debt. And as interest rates go up, you've got to borrow more money to pay off the interest on the former debt. It's a doom loop. Now, maybe I could be accused of fear-mongering by referring to it as a doom loop. But that's where we are. This is going to be a problem. But there's another thing to understand about what's happening right now, and it is that when interest rates go up, older bonds lose value, a lot of value. And the reason this matters is because there are pension plans and mutual funds and governments around the world that are holding older bonds. And I'll explain the math to you real quick. You know, I actually went back and listened to my show yesterday. And I never do this. I do not listen to my own show. I don't recognize my own voice like all of us. Do I really sound like that? But I listened to it because I wanted to kind of listen and say, am I explaining this stuff clearly enough? I thought I did okay yesterday, talking about real estate prices. But let me explain what's happening on the balance sheets of banks, insurance companies, pension plans, foundations, governments around the world that are holding bonds right now, and each one of these institutions goes out and they buy bonds. So if you bought a bond, let's say a year ago, a bond usually being like $1,000 per bond, and it was paying you 1%, you were collecting $10 a year in interest, okay? And a lot of people bought these bonds in the trillions of dollars. So now new bonds that are being issued now are paying 4% or $40 a year. So you've got an old bond that's paying you 1% or $10 a year. Now, if somebody needs to buy a bond, they're looking through the market and they say, oh, well, the new bonds are now paying 4% or $40 a year. So, of course, everybody is going to buy the new bond, right? You're going to get something with a better rate of return. But say that you hold one of the old bonds that's only yielding 1%. It's only paying you $10 a year on your $1,000 that you loaned the institution. And these bonds can be corporate or government, but it's government that had the most, these really low interest rates. But what also happens in the bond market, a lot of these pension plans and insurance companies and everybody else, governments, they trade these bonds. Sometimes they buy them. Sometimes they sell them. They need money. They need to raise money. They need to sell some of these bonds that are in their portfolio. Well, if you're holding on to a bond that you bought that's only yielding 1%, how do you think you sell that bond? If the what you're competing against is newer bonds that are paying four times the interest rate. If somebody's going to pay me $40 a year to loan them $1,000, why in the world would I loan anybody $1,000 for just $10 a year? The only way that they can do that is they have to discount their bond. This is how interest rates move up and down. by the value of the bond. So let me see if I can get this clear on the radio without a whiteboard. If you have a $1,000 bond yielding 1% and you're trying to sell it, you're competing with new bonds that are yielding 4%. You need to discount your old bond, the 1% bond, to make it equal to the 4%. Now, how would you do that in this comparison? $1,000 yielding $10 in interest versus a $1,000 bond yielding $40, how much do you have to discount your old bond, only yielding 1%, in order to make it equal to the bond that is paying 4% now? You have to discount it 75%. So if you bought a bond for $1,000 yielding 1% and you need to sell it now, you can only sell that $1,000 bond for $250, you've lost 75% of your initial investment. Because now at $250, that 1% or $10 a year is actually 4% of the investment. I hope that makes sense. I know this stuff can be complicated. But you've got a bunch of people around the world right now. As I said, this is governments. These are pension plans. These are insurance companies. These are mutual funds that have got a bunch of bonds on their balance sheet. And they may say, look, we've got $1 billion worth of bonds on our balance sheet. Well, that's not really true anymore. Because that $1 billion of bonds that they have is yielding such a small amount that if they ever tried to sell them, they'd have to discount them heavily. So their $1 billion portfolio that they tell everybody that they've got to make them look financially solvent is really only worth $250 million. They've lost $750 million on that $1 billion portfolio should they need to sell these bonds anytime soon. They have a thing called mark to market. And I'm not really sure. Some institutions are forced in their financial disclosures to do a mark to market, and some are not. Mark to market means the current value of something. And so the current value of a bond that somebody bought a couple of years ago that's paying them 1%, a couple of years ago that was worth the $1,000 that they put into it. Today it's worth $250. If they start acknowledging these losses at the banking level, a lot of banks are going to be completely insolvent. Because their balance sheet is going to have lost, just in this particular case, in bonds, you know, some of the bonds are paying 2%, so they'd only lose 50% of their money. I know I'm getting into a number salad here, but what I'm saying is not only are the rising interest rates hurting companies that have to pay out more on debt, governments that have to pay out more in interest expense, but the people who are holding old bonds, and this is the first time it's really happened in 40 years, but their balance sheets, these higher interest rates are blowing a hole in their balance sheets should they ever actually need to raise cash and sell some of their old bonds into the market, because they're going to have to discount them 50 to 75%. And this is the seeds of a financial crisis. So this is incredibly important stuff. And this is why the Federal Reserve, I believe, will reverse course and try to crush interest rates again, because it will make the old bonds more valuable again. I just don't think it's going to work. So this is just another one of the hits that keeps on coming from our financial elites, the masters of the universe that have been running the U.S. economy. They have made us so fragile that this 40-year bull market in bonds, should it ever come to an end, is going to have some pretty dramatic consequences. And I think that's what we're at the cusp of now. Again, it's not fear-mongering. It's if you understand it, you may be able to position yourself well enough to survive it. So anyway, I find this stuff fascinating, and I'm just dying. I got to admit, the suspense is killing me. I don't want to see a meltdown necessarily. I know we need to do this. We need to go through this pain so that we can clear out all the debt so our children can take over actually a solvent country. We have so horribly mismanaged things, allowed politicians to talk us into just the worst behaviors and malinvestment. And we need to clear that out. We need to take the pain. You baby boomers, you created this. Gen X, you created this. We need to suffer the consequences from it, so we can clear out the excess debt so our children can have some hope at a financial future. But I got to tell you, I'm not actually looking forward to being in the middle of it. Hopefully, understanding it, I'll be poised to come out on top. We'll see. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I did look up during the break here what savings accounts are paying now, and they are starting to pay a little bit of interest. This would be great news for seniors if inflation wasn't running at 8.5% official, 16% reality inflation. It would be kind of nice that you're finally – I mean, I am still stunned. Even that, AMAC is the Conservative Senior Citizens Association, a reaction to the very left-leaning AARP. But where have these institutions been representing seniors? Where have they been to just blast a Federal Reserve that took interest rates down to zero so that all of these seniors who socked money away during their life, the ones that did the responsible thing and saved money their whole lives, they've been getting nothing on their fixed income investments. Bonds, CDs, savings accounts. For 14 years, they've been getting nothing on their savings. And most people need some interest to make it to the end of life. And senior citizens, I mean, I don't know what a protest or what a protest movement of only senior citizens, but I can imagine a lot of scooters clogging up the streets of Washington, D.C. if the seniors had gotten in the streets. I would be so mad. I would have spent the last 14 years fuming at the Federal Reserve. Of course, luckily for the Federal Reserve, most people, including senior citizens, don't understand what it is. I would have been furious that I had spent my entire life sacrificing and saving and being wise only to put my money into CDs that were paying me 0.5% a year. Well, banks now, I looked up bankrate.com. They always have kind of a good snapshot. Capital One is up to paying 2.35% in interest. We got some banks here. It looks like around 3%, anywhere from about 2.5% to 3%, you can get on savings accounts now. And these are, you know, no minimum balances, just they are starting to actually pay these things. I believe it was J.P. Morgan just announced record interest collection, meaning that on the loans they're making on their credit cards, we know credit card rates have been going up, record collections on interest, but their savings account rates, this is J.P. Morgan, one of the biggest money centers in the world, they were still paying something like 0.8% on most of their savings accounts, something along those lines. I can't remember the exact numbers, but the banks are finally giving you a little bit of return on savings right now. But just think about this for just a second to understand. Don't get too excited about a 3% interest rate on your savings when inflation, real world inflation. Do I need to cover this again? We don't calculate inflation the same way we did in 1980. If we did, inflation would be running closer to 15, 16% right now, not the bogus number they tell us at 8.5%. But even at the acknowledged inflation rate of 8.5% that we're at now, whatever it is, 8.3, 8.4, whatever it is, a 3% return on your savings means you're losing 5% of your purchasing power every single year. So don't get too excited about that 3%. Because you're still actually going backwards, and backwards in a pretty good way. I don't know if you could go to a financial advisor and he goes, hey, man, I got a great stock tip for you. I got a stock right here guaranteed to lose you 5% a year. I don't know there'd be a whole lot of takers. Yet for Americans right now, you are faced with that every time you put your money into something yielding 3% into a savings account or a mutual fund or a bond or CD that yields 3%. That's essentially the person selling you that saying, we've got something where we can lock in 5% losses per year. And that's at current inflation. I believe the inflation will get worse going forward. It's going to vacillate a little bit. We may see some dip in the inflation rate. There may be some levels of deflation. But what it looks like is setting up. We'll see if I'm right about this. What it looks like it's setting up is that asset prices, meaning homes, cars, land, things like this, some of those things are going to deflate. They're going to get cheaper. houses have got to get cheaper. I spoke about it yesterday. I won't rehash it again today. Houses at these interest rates have got to get substantially cheaper. So we may see asset prices decline, real things decline, while consumer prices go up. That's not a good spot to be in. Just remember, it is the Death Star, the Federal Reserve, that created this mess, hand in hand with our government. Be right back. When I come back next hour, we will ask the question, is Roger Wicker the most dangerous man in America right now? An article on American Thinker says that may be the case. Isn't it interesting that we can have such a vanilla, uninspiring, establishment, milquetoast senator, but he could actually be one of the most dangerous people on the planet right now? I'll explain that to you next hour. Part of my podcast title will be Something Wicker This Way Comes. So we'll take a look at that. I was looking at Market Watch during the break. Is it interesting when I report what the 10-year bond is doing, what mortgage rates are based on? Well, it's down a couple of about 0.2%, back down to around 4%. The crypto stuff is, the suspense is killing me on crypto. It's been trading between 19,000 and 21,000 now for months, and it's going to break one way or the other. I'm afraid it's going to be to the downside, but I could be wrong. I know a lot of the crypto people disagree with me there, but it's been trading like the NASDAQ, which I think is concerning. You would think in a stock market meltdown, if a safe haven was crypto, that crypto would have been going up, but it's been going down, but so has gold, so who knows? But there's a headline on MarketWatch that says, inflation is hijacking retirement savings. To all you retirees out there, let me tell you how the federal government has screwed you hard. Now, first of all, they've been forcing interest rates down so you could earn nothing on your savings for 14 years. That's a long time to a retiree to get bupkis on your savings. And now the inflation is eroding the purchasing power of those dollars that have been basically been sitting idle for 14 years, earning you nothing. Now inflation is eating away at it. And then there's one of my favorite statistics is the fact that because they understate inflation, because they jiggered in the 1990s with the way that we calculate inflation to make the number appear smaller, all of us know what's happened to our health insurance premiums, the cost of owning a car, cost of buying a house. But they've been telling us for so long that inflation's only 1.5%, right? Up until just those last year, they were still hanging into this, oh, everything's going great. But there have been calculations done that said if they were honest about the inflation rate over the past, I can't remember what the time period was, 20 or 30 years, your Social Security checks would be double what they are right now. Double. And not just now, but they would have been for years now. You're getting about half what actually would have been indexed for inflation. Of course, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And the people running a Ponzi scheme, the last thing they can really afford to do is put more money out the back end. They can't, you know, pay off the initial investors. They want to make sure that they don't have to pay out too much while they sucker newer people in. Of course, this one is done by law. It's a legalized, enforced Ponzi scheme. Kind of interesting. Just another case of where if an average American was to put something together like Social Security, you'd be doing jail time. You would be rooming with Bernie Madoff if you came up with a Social Security scheme. But when the federal government does it, we just call it an entitlement and one of the most important programs that the government administers. But so to all of you seniors out there who have been dutifully voting all of these years, been patriotically paying your taxes, boy, the government has had its way with you. And this obviously not only affects seniors, but many seniors, had they had decent interest on their savings for the last 14 years, had their Social Security checks actually kept pace with inflation and were double what they would have been over the past 10 to 20 years, imagine the wealth that you could have passed on to your children to help them out as well. But no. The government, through lies and confiscation, has basically stripped you of your wealth. Yeah, it's not hard to get to libertarianism. It's hard to break free of the tribal mentality of our two-party system. I'm going to take another swing at it next hour when we take a look at Roger Wicker, maybe the most dangerous man in the world right now. I think I undersold him. He may not be just the most dangerous man in America. He may be one of the most dangerous men in the world. And the thing is if you vote really hard, and if we get this red wave in November, he may be more dangerous to all of humanity. There's a possibility that our own Roger Wicker, boy, Mississippi's making the news these days for all of the wrong reasons. We'll get to that when I come back. Stick around. It's quite a thing to report on. I've always wondered how 160,000 people get off their couches to go vote for him in a primary. It's so weird. Be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Later in the hour, we'll get to a little bit of Tech Tuesday. And we're going to talk a little bit about Elon Musk and some of the things he's working on. It's very interesting to me. I learned long ago, and I've got this rule I live by, which is don't fall in love with politicians. I'm a huge Ron Paul fan. But if Ron Paul came out with some abhorrent idea or policy or whatever, I'm not ever going to try to do some mental gymnastics to justify it. I'll challenge him on it. I'll be mad at him for it. What we do is we fall in love with these people who exploit our fears, much like a cult leader does, and then they do things that are against our own best interest, and we somehow have to do the mental gymnastics because we've fallen in love. And we need to figure out how we defend this person because we've invested our entire personality in it. It's kind of interesting. If you were around during early 2000s, and this is one of the biggest examples I remember of this, was that the Dixie Chicks went to England and they said something along the lines of, "We're embarrassed to have George W. Bush as our president." And I was mad at him at the time. Because that was back when I was a Kool-Aid-drinking, neocon, warmongering Republican. And what came out of that largely was the idea, shut up and sing. You remember this? I think there might have been a book by that title. And we would say the same thing about athletes. Would you just play basketball? We don't care what you think. Shut up. Now, both sides do this. But as somebody who came from the conservative side of things, the Republican side of things, I know Republicans were very big on this, shut up and dribble, shut up and sing. What I find fascinating about that now is that people are just absolutely in love with Kanye West now. Because he says maybe what you want to hear. Nobody who agrees with Kanye West and his stances right now, even though he's just a singer, ultimately he's just a singer. Now, he's an interesting character, I'll admit it. I like some of the things he says, some of the things I disagree with. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. It runs the gamut. I'm not in love with Kanye. But what I'm trying to point out is just it's interesting the way the collective mind works when you get into these situations. So we don't really mean shut up and sing. We mean shut up and sing if you're going to say things we disagree with. And this is both sides. But if you say things we agree with, we want you on the public stage making big comments. Just interesting. Interesting human nature observation there. The Dixie Chicks turned out to be right about George W. Bush. He lied us into a war that cost millions of lives and trillions of dollars. Huh? Who would have thunk it at the time? I remember being mad at the Dixie Chicks. I wanted them to shut up and sing. It turns out, my apologies to the Dixie Chicks. They were closer to the truth than I was back then. Roger Wicker. Our own Roger Wicker. I do my segment at the end of the week, this week on the Crazy Train, and I've been playing stories. Mississippi does not get a lot of national attention. Deion Sanders has brought us some positive national attention, but I did even point out that on the 60 Minutes episode with Deion Sanders, when they showed shots of Mississippi, just B-roll background shots while they were narrating over top of it, they were showing Shotgun Shack sitting on top of cinder blocks and talking about the fact we had no water. The other stories that I've done have been the water crisis, the corruption of the welfare system here with the scandal with Phil Bryant Brett Favre and the new family. And then most recently, the teacher that scared the crap out of the little kids with the scary Halloween mask. Mississippi, we can't get out of our own way. Mainstream media has always been very unforgiving to us. It's been, probably been a couple of years since I played it now, but the station owner, Matt here, had found something. It was like interesting facts of the best and worst about every state in the country. And it would be, you know, Florida grows the most oranges, but they also have, you know, I don't know, the most beach erosion. I don't remember what the things were, but every state had one good thing and one bad thing. When they got to Mississippi, it was like four bad things. More, I remember one of them was Mississippians watch more porn, spend more hours on web pornography than any other state, and they have the highest poverty rate in the nation. It was something along those lines. It was pretty brutal. But anyway, Mississippi's not making the news for many good things these days. And this is certainly one of those cases. Could our own Roger Wicker, who I just describe as really vanilla, kind of milquetoast, and I'm not challenging him as a person. He's just one of them. You know what I mean? To me, my impression of Roger Wicker is if the leadership's for it, he's for it. If leadership's against it, he's against it. I don't hear any interesting ideas coming out of him. I don't see any fight against anything that probably most of his constituents would like to see him fight on. He's a cutout. He's a Republican establishment cutout. This is what Mississippi elects. And this is why I get into these disagreements with people. I would like to see the Republican Party saved. That'd be great. I'm down with that. As a libertarian, I'm not in love with the Libertarian Party. I think they're doing very interesting things right now. But we have a better shot of returning freedom to this country and some level of prosperity if the Republican Party fixed themselves, went back to actually free market principles. But they haven't been for those things for 100 years. So I get into arguments saying, is it better to try to reform the Republican Party, or do we need a third party like the Libertarian Party to start upsetting the apple cart? I just don't think the Republican Party can be saved. And the people in Mississippi, of all the states in the country, the people in Mississippi who tell me, well, we just need to work within the Republican Party to change it for the better, I keep thinking, how many chances have you had? You couldn't get Chris McDaniel, possibly one of the greatest senators Mississippi has ever had, state senators Mississippi has ever had. You couldn't get him across the finish line against Thad Cochran, who we knew was in serious mental decline at the time and had been in Washington, D.C. for decades. You couldn't even get Chris McDaniel, a younger, more conservative, more freedom-loving candidate, across the primary line against a aging, mentally deficient Thad Cochran. So pardon me if I'm a little suspicious of the ideas that you're going to reform the Republican Party anytime soon. Mississippi sends up establishment characters, and there is none more establishment than Roger Wicker, but he is making some news. Could Roger Wicker be the most dangerous person in Washington, D.C., in the United States, and possibly the world? Well, I'll tell you what, I've gone a little long here. I'm going to take a break so I can spend some time on this story. There's a story from the American Thinker that talks just about that. And this is one of those things where, I know, we don't think our phone calls or our emails or anything like that matters. Mississippi should be up in arms about this. Absolutely should be nipping at Roger Wicker's heels. I'll tell you why it might not matter, though, when I come back. Stick around. I went home with a waitress. The way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too. I thought of a funny other hypocrisy in this, you know, the shut up and sing thing, where we tell singers, shut up, we don't, you know, we want politics out of our entertainment. Can we not just relax? And I'm with you on that. Yeah, I don't want to have to watch a SEC football game and have some political thing thrown in my face. It's just off-putting. But so I agree with that. But it's kind of funny. People will say, you know, Hollywood notoriously left. People will constantly say, you may be a good actor. Nobody wants to hear what you say about politics. Just shut up and act. Unless Tim Allen or James Woods sends out something on Twitter, it gets retweeted by a bunch of people. Suddenly, we want to hear from people in Hollywood if they agree with us. And the same thing, it's right and left. It's just interesting. Hypocrisy, one of the national pastimes here in the United States. It is my sworn enemy. I try to make sure it does not invade my life, but it's just something to think about. I don't know if we can see these things about ourselves, so I explore them here as an observer of the political system here. All right, the serious stuff. This is a story from the American Thinker. This is a conservative website, a piece by Francis P. Sempa. This is how it starts off. I'm not really mincing words here. Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker may be the most dangerous office holder in Washington. A member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Wicker keeps publicly making proposals that would effectively have the United States at war with Russia. His latest proposal is reported in the HuffPost and the National Review online. So there you go. You got a liberal and a conservative magazine. Is for the United States and, quote, a strong coalition of like-minded nations, unquote, to consider imposing a no-fly zone over Ukraine. He is now the second member of Congress joining GOP Representative Adam Kinzinger to recommend the no-fly zone idea. Now, you remember that Kinzinger is one of these anti-Trump people aren't really fond with. Very interesting to me, a very heavily Trump-supporting state. You find your senator, your senior senator from the state of Mississippi, is in bed with the anti-Trump Kinzinger in proposing a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Senator Wicker, according to the Huffington Post, explained his support for the no-fly zone as follows, quote, tens of thousands of women and children fleeing from Kiev West have created a humanitarian situation that the international community needs to step in and be involved in. Now, this is interesting in a myriad of ways. Kim Wade actually sent this story out to all the show hosts yesterday. Thank you to Kim Wade. I hadn't seen this. I don't really go on the American Thinker that often, but they do have some interesting pieces. So this may have already been covered by other show hosts, so I apologize if I'm being repetitive, but I do think this is something that everybody should know about, that your senator, your senior senator from the state of Mississippi, is chomping at the bit for war with Russia. But as the only openly anti-war talk show host, probably in the history of conservative talk radio in the state of Mississippi, I probably have a little bit slightly different take on this. It's very interesting to me to hear Roger Wicker say, quote, tens of thousands of women and children fleeing from Kiev West have created a humanitarian situation that the international community needs to step in and be involved in. That's rich. The U.S. involvement in taking down Bashar al-Assad in Syria created waves of millions of refugees into Europe. People fleeing for their lives because the U.S. government, at the behest of Roger Wicker and his ilk, were actually paying radical jihadists to wreck the country. Ditto in Libya. In Libya, and this was a Democrat-run operation in Libya, but Roger Wicker, as one of the head warmongers in our Congress, participated in this as well. The wrecking of the nation of Libya created waves of millions of refugees across the world, people fleeing for their lives. Suddenly now he's concerned about a humanitarian crisis of people, of women and children fleeing. Just interesting to me how he can see one, but he couldn't see the other. Previously, Senator Wicker suggested sending U.S. ground forces to Ukraine and said that in responding to Russian aggression in Ukraine, that, quote, nothing should be taken off the table. That was his quote, the story says, including a nuclear first strike. Roger Wicker, our little milquetoast, vanilla, cutout, establishment Republican with no inspirational or intriguing ideas whatsoever, turns out may be one of the most dangerous people. And the reason he's so dangerous is not just his rhetoric, it's his position. Wicker is in line to become the ranking Republican on the Armed Services Committee, and if the GOP takes back the Senate in 2023, he will likely chair the committee. And the story goes on in the American Thinker. Have Senator Wicker and the other warmongers, and the story says, yes, warmongers, not learned from history. When a great power meddles in a regional war, as in 1914 in the Balkans, the war usually escalates and widens. In 1914, what German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck once termed, quote, some damned foolish thing in the Balkans, led to the cataclysm of the First World War. Now, here's why I say every single constituent of Roger Wicker should be lighting up his phone lines to say, stand down and shut up. Because that's important for people to be on the record saying, we're not really down with World War III. Look, there's a lot of things that we can do and look in hindsight and say, boy, we really shouldn't have done that. COVID lockdowns, even the debt spending and the financial crisis that will soon be upon us. There's many mistakes that you can make that you're going to have to pay a price for. World War III, that's a biggie. We spent, what, $8 trillion in the Middle East and failed wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and Syria, still funding the bombing of Yemen. These are all things with consequences. They're bankrupting our country. They've cost thousands of our troops their lives, hundreds of thousands their mental health or physical health in other ways, millions of casualties around the world. But for the United States, we can kind of recover from those things. But with hindsight, we know they were mistakes. World War III, that's a biggie. You know, I've talked a lot about the fact we're not good, proactive people. We're just not. And this is where libertarians like myself have got a problem, because we can warn people about stuff for 20, 30 years. Now, I haven't been a libertarian that long, but there have been many good libertarians that have been out there for 20, 30 years. We can warn you about the Patriot Act in 2001. And it takes until essentially 2020 before most conservative Americans go, you know what? That wasn't really a great idea, was it? We gave the government a ton of power, and now they're using some of these things against our own Republican president. And it's very frustrating to the libertarian to say, good God Almighty, please get out ahead of these things. Stop letting these things get to a bad level. Well, the Patriot Act is bad. It was bad from its inception. It's bad now. And it's probably going to be with us for the rest of our lives. This government never gives up any power that it usurps. But World War III, that's something pretty tough to walk back from. And so you should be lighting up Roger Wicker's phone lines and saying, we do not want war with Russia. You need to be advocating for a diplomatic solution immediately. And quit talking about a nuclear first strike and quit talking about a no-fly zone. For those of you out there who don't understand what a no-fly zone is, what Roger Wicker is proposing is that we put our planes in the air over Ukraine and start shooting down Russian jets. That leads to war with Russia. A direct war with Russia. Right now we've got a proxy war with Russia that could have been avoided with a call in one afternoon, as I've said many times. But this would be direct confrontation between American pilots, NATO pilots, and Russia. It would kick off a war. Now, Roger Wicker didn't care about the throngs of people running for their lives from Syria or Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan or Yemen. He didn't care about any of those humanitarian crises, but you know, maybe he's a racist. Those were all brown people fleeing for their lives. Maybe he only cares when it's the white people from Ukraine. No, it's that his big defense contractor masters, you don't get to be a ranking member of the Senate Arms Committee if you're not out there doing the bidding of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, United Technologies, and the rest of the war profiteers. That's why he's there. I haven't even looked on Open Secrets, but I would imagine if you look at Roger Wicker's biggest contributors, you're going to find some defense contractor names in there you might recognize. Here's why calling Roger Wicker's phone may not matter. The story finishes up with says, perhaps Senator Wicker's Mississippi constituents can send him packing in 2024 when he's up for re-election. Until then, he should be moved to Senate committees where he can do less harm. Again, this comes from a conservative website that calls Roger Wicker the most dangerous office holder in Washington, D.C. Here's why it might not matter. The rumor is, and I cannot confirm this, the rumor is that Roger Wicker is about to do the Mississippi shuffle. Now, if he gets his head of the Armed Services Committee. Maybe he sticks around a little bit. But the idea was, that was told to me about a year ago, is that he plans on stepping down, letting Tet Reeves find another Republican cutout to put into his place so they can run as an incumbent. We haven't been able to vote for an open Senate seat in, I believe it's 40 years in Mississippi. This is such a con job. This is the way that the establishment Republican Party has seized control of Mississippi and makes it near impossible for a challenger to come out of the woodwork, because they don't give you an opportunity to have an open seat and make a decision for yourself. They install somebody, let them run as the incumbent, put all the Republican money behind them, bash anybody who challenges them, and the incumbents stay for as long as they want to. Roger Wicker may be poised to step down. I would imagine Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are probably making him some pretty sweet offers these days. But what he is doing, and again, to those of you who are opposed, when you see Jackson's water failing, you see the roads are in a mess, you see the homeless crisis, you name your domestic policy problem, that if the government is going to spend money, wouldn't it be nice if it was spent to somehow improve the United States infrastructure or anything? Now, to me, the government will never spend effective money to address any problem, but the idea of this foreign aid, for a lot of conservatives, that's gotten a little old. And remember that Roger Wicker's only complaint with the first, what was it, $55 billion to Ukraine? His only problem with that was it wasn't enough, and we didn't get it to him fast enough. Now, he's proposing a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Direct conflict with Russia, or boots on the ground. It's been reported that the 101st Airborne is actually training not far from the border of Ukraine. It's good to have some Republicans with me on the anti-interventionist thing, finally, after decades. I like to see it, but we don't seem to really be exercising that muscle. We talk about it a lot, but we don't seem to hold our candidates accountable to these things. And now one of our vanilla senators here, establishment, empty suits, has become one of the most dangerous people in Washington, D.C. And if you vote real hard, if you vote real hard in a couple of weeks, you may make him in charge of this Armed Services Committee to an even more dangerous level. I want to see a red wave, but I sure would like to see a red wave without Senator Wicker, one of the chief warmongers there, in charge of foreign policy issues, if this is his stance. And Roger Wicker's not dumb. He knows what I know. He knows that NATO has been provoking and encircling Russia for 30 years. He knows that during the Trump administration, they started sending lethal weapons after, in 2014, during the Obama administration, we overthrew the Russian-friendly government in Ukraine and installed a government hostile to Russia right on their border. Roger Wicker knows the provocations against Russia, that this war was created by the West, essentially, that in 2014, before the coup by the U.S. State Department and other Western powers, that Russia and Ukraine were getting along just fine, and there was no risk of World War III with Russia, a nuclear power involved. He knows all of these things, but he doesn't care. For some reason, depravity, profiteering, campaign cash, some reason, he knows all of these things just as well as I do, but he's trying to stoke this war even further. Again, that's on American Thinker, how Mississippi could cause World War III. Well, we've made the news again. I guess there's that. Be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It was kind of interesting in light of this story about Roger Wicker being the most dangerous man in Washington, D.C., advocating for a no-fly zone over Ukraine to get us in direct military conflict with Russia. He also wants troops on the ground. 30 Democrats signed a letter to the Biden administration urging them to get to the table with diplomacy. to find a peace deal, to find a way to stop this. And they had some language in there about, you know, further escalation of this could lead to very serious consequences, World War III, the kind of stuff Democrats used to say. So it was kind of funny. I was going to juxtapose the two. Now, I'm no fan of the Democrats. I got to tell you, though, if I had to stop and think about it for a minute, would I rather see the Republicans retake the Senate and the House? I'm on record saying I want a red wave for sure. I just wish Republicans were a million times better than they are, but they're not as bad as the Democrats. So I'd like to see a red wave to stop some of the most harebrained ideas, the most insane ideas of the political left these days. But would I rather have a Republican-led Senate and World War III or a Democrat-led Senate? Now, the Democrat-led Senate does not necessarily mean we won't have World War III. They have decided they are warmongers now, too. The welfare state wasn't enough for them. They want the warfare state as well now. But it was interesting. So this letter came out, and the squad, AOC. AOC's been getting some heat from her constituents. They're saying, you said you were an outsider. Now, all of a sudden, you're promoting war with Russia? And so she signed onto this letter. The whole squad, Ilhan Omar, the whole group. Now, Ro Khanna was on there, too. He's actually an anti-war Democrat. I disagree with him on a million things, but he is right on wars. But I thought it was interesting. At least some Democrats were standing up and saying, we need diplomacy. We need a peace deal now. Well, the Biden administration basically came out and told them, after this letter was sent to Joe Biden, Joe Biden's handlers, we know it wasn't Joe Biden. I doubt they even woke him up for this letter. The White House responded to it. It's interesting, isn't it? We always talk about the White House. You know, Joe Biden will go out and say something, and then you'll hear on the media, the White House has clarified his statements. And it's usually the exact opposite of what Biden said. Who is the White House, if not Joe Biden and the president in the White House? It's just interesting. You'll notice this. Joe Biden will say something. It will be challenged by the White House. Sure, it would be nice to know who the White House is, because they appear to be quite powerful. Anyway, the White House responded to these Democrats. Basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, we're warmongers now. Sit down and shut up. And the squad and these 30 Democrat legislators basically caved. Immediately. Took like a day. And the problem is that they weren't genuine about this in the first place. Now, maybe Ro Khanna was, but the rest of the degenerate Democrats on this letter were just posturing. They were pandering ahead of midterms. A lot of these were House members up for election every 2 years. And so they were trying to go out and look like they were not advocating for World War III. But the Biden administration, the White House, whoever that might be, put them right back in their place and said, hey, did you not get the memo? Barack Obama made us all warmongers now, too. We're taking in defense contractor money as well. Don't upset the apple cart. I would imagine there were, you know, behind the scenes things. Now, I'm just theorizing right now. But I would imagine there were some contacts made and said, do you know who funds our party and your chances for reelection? Do you understand the defense industry is now one of our BFFs? You might not want to be calling for peace if you want to get reelected. That's probably how that went down. Anyway, Democrats, now warmongers, Roger Wicker leading the warmonger right. I wanted to get in some tech news today. AI is one thing we're keeping an eye on, and we got one guy kind of running the show for the United States. I don't know how many people are familiar with Eric Schmidt. He was a former Google guy. Really turned out he's a tech oligarch, and you know, when it comes to tech, probably one of the most dangerous guys in the country when it comes to tech. CNBC ran an article, how Google's former CEO, Eric Schmidt, helped write AI, artificial intelligence laws, in Washington without publicly disclosing investments in AI startups. 5 months after Schmidt was appointed to the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence, he made a little noticed private investment in an initial seed round of financing for a startup company called Beacon. It was the first of a handful of direct investments he would make in AI startup companies during his tenure as chairman of the AI Commission. Now, I love these things that they always say in these stories because it's probably true. It's just gross that it's true. CNBC says, while there's no indication that Schmidt broke any ethics rules or did anything unlawful, government ethics advisors say his investments presented a huge conflict of interest. You think? Of course, this is no different than Congress critters and the rest of them that profit off this system. Federal Reserve chairmen who trade on their accounts prior to making big announcements that move markets. This is the corrupt government we all live under now. As the Libertarian Party tweeted out, and I think it's pinned to the top of their Twitter feed, it says, "You are living under the government your founders warned you about." So this is Eric Schmidt heading up the AR, the AI stuff here in this country while investing. And I love this. They say his credentials, however, were impeccable given his deep experience in Silicon Valley, his experience advising the Defense Department, and a vast personal fortune estimated about $20 billion. You don't get $20 billion unless you play the game with big tech and the defense industry. A couple of other things, and I'm going to flesh out, you know, I've kind of been teasing this during the show and commenting on it. People seem to really be in love with Elon Musk now, and I find him an interesting character. I find some of the things he does interesting. I am for the entrepreneur and the innovators in society, but I think we're a little short-sighted in this man crush I see a lot of people with, and I guess women do, that people have with Elon Musk now because he makes a few good statements about Twitter or about free speech. I applaud these things. He seems to be bucking the system a little bit. We all kind of like that. He doesn't seem to be part of the club, but is he? The man love, the man crush people seem to have on Elon Musk, I got to tell you, you might want to just temper that just a tad bit and start to think about how did Elon Musk get to where Elon Musk is today? We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Stick around. All right, final segment of the day. Just a little bit of Tech Tuesday stuff here. I think the show has come to be kind of a warning about what's coming at us technologically. Had I had a show in 2005, maybe I could have gotten out ahead and warned you about social media, but no such luck. We are fully encased in the social media world, which I think is really not, it's not good for us. We can't handle this much news, this much information, this much online fighting and hatred. But anyway, I digress. A dad is the first Brit to get microchipped with a bank card implant, letting him pay with just his hand. Arnie Zoke, S-Z-O-K-E, 40, forked out about $350 to have the operation in Germany. So he's got a little microchip in his hand. He can wave over a sensor, and he can pay for his stuff. Surgeons open a pocket in the side of the hand for a safety pin-sized chip just half a millimeter thick, then stitch it up within 5 minutes. Look how easy it is. Father of two, Arnie, said, "Using the chip takes a bit of learning. It's like a normal card, but you have to be a little more precise where you tap." Quote, this is what he says. "Technology is, they are really exploiting our laziness. It means I don't have to keep a wallet with me at all the time." Oh, heaven forbid. This reminds me of the people who came up with the peanut butter and jelly in one jar. I can't remember if I came up with this, or this might be a Brian Regan thing. Now, I can't be opening two jars. I mean, I'm opening a jar and spreading something, opening another jar and spreading something else. I don't have time to be opening two jars, and then at the end I got to close two jars. This guy doesn't want to have to pull his wallet out of his pants. Guy's pretty obese. I'm just going to say it. I'm just saying they're exploiting our laziness and sloth, trying to corral us into this cashless society. And now they are firmly implanting the chips. This brings me to Elon Musk. Now, I find Elon Musk interesting. Joe Rogan interviews with Elon Musk are always interesting. But the conservative side of things has really seemed to fall in love with Elon Musk. Really hoping he takes over Twitter. I like Elon Musk's anti-censorship style. I like the things he says that ticks off a lot of the ridiculous things that are assumed in the mainstream narrative. Elon Musk does some interesting things. I just caution against falling in love with Elon Musk. How did Elon Musk become Elon Musk? He has been at the teat of the American taxpayer to build his $160 billion fortune. Now, it's significantly less than that now, I think. I say on here, I talk a lot about financial stuff, but I say many times, don't ever take financial advice from me because my timing is always terrible, except for this. I've been on air now for a couple of years questioning when Tesla stock was just trading at like 1,100 times its earnings. At the same time, companies like BMW and General Motors and Ford and Mercedes and Porsche were all coming out with electric vehicles, many of them with better ranges, more established names, with better distribution networks, and yet people were bidding up Tesla stock. And I said, this doesn't look sustainable to me. And it turns out I'm right. I believe Tesla stock is maybe halved from where I started talking about it. So if you took my advice and shorted Tesla stock, you're welcome. Please don't ever take my investment advice on anything. It could shoot to the sky tomorrow. Who knows? But Elon Musk has made his way, has made his vast fortune that he has now. I believe wasn't he originally a PayPal investor? He and Peter Thiel? Isn't that how he originally got kind of his seed capital when he had PayPal, another one of these electronic payment systems that is now being used for massive censorship? They made a floated out a trial balloon the other day to just start taking money out of people's accounts if they disagreed with your political stance on things. Like $2,500 fine. You got it in your PayPal account? We just take it. Because we don't like what you said on social media. Something along those lines. Anyway. Since then, Elon Musk has done things like government contracts and subsidies for SpaceX. And I got a little ticked off on him when they did the shooting a Tesla into space stunt. Did you see this thing? Do you remember this? There was like a dummy in the driver's seat, and they took a picture of the Earth behind it, and it was this dummy and a Tesla. Supposedly this was a shot from space of this thing. And I think people still believe this thing. There was at least a video that I saw that there was like a second in the clip where a green screen kind of got exposed in the thing. All I'm saying is that may be a little suspicious. Elon Musk is also made a lot of his money off of subsidies for the electric vehicle. A constant target of the show in that I'm not opposed to having the alternative and the choice to have an electric vehicle. There's many things about electric vehicles that are really very cool. But this push towards forcing us all towards them is a disaster, particularly if you live in the state of California. And the government subsidies, I believe that the U.S. taxpayer paid essentially $8,000. Wasn't that the number? For every Tesla sold, people got an $8,000 subsidy for that, or Tesla got $8,000, something along those lines. So he's made his bones, made his fortune at the teat of the federal government. So I'm excited about anybody who's a champion for free speech. But as I say, just don't fall in love with these people. Maintain some levels of suspicion. And here's one of those Elon Musk stories. Elon Musk has delayed a major demo of his controversial new brain chip. The Neuralink technology has already shocked the world, showing a monkey play Pong with its thoughts. But the main goal is to implant the chips into people's brains, allowing those with paralysis to control things like smartphones and computers. An update was due to be presented by the firm on October 31st, but Musk, 51, said it will now take place a month later on November 30th. He simply tweeted, the world's richest man didn't give any explanation for the delay. He simply tweeted, quote, Neuralink show and tell on November 30th. Founded in 2016, Neuralink is developing implantable brain chips that are inserted into regions of the mind that control movement. Eventually, the company wants to provide its implants to people to boost their intelligence. The aim to create full brain interface within 25 years. This is an Elon Musk thing. Now, there are technologies, and God knows I'd love to see something boost the intelligence of the American people. My attack on it is nutrition and destroying the Department of Education. I think we'd add 10 average IQ points to Americans if we got the garbage out of their food and stopped indoctrinating them in failed schools. But there may be technologies that if they were only in the hands of good, decent people, could be really beneficial to mankind. And there may be a day where paralyzed people may be able to regain control of their own bodies through things like this. I'm not to stand in the way of science, but something like a brain implant that is designed within 25 years to be an interface with you and technology, that's a very dangerous idea. And this is what Elon Musk has planned. Now, maybe he's completely benevolent in his intentions with this technology, but I got to tell you, it's a little creepy to me, some of the things that he's involved with. Again, I'm not an anti-Elon Musk guy, but I reserve and continue to maintain a large bit of skepticism and suspicion of anybody with that level of wealth that was created essentially largely through taxpayer subsidies, and that wants to monkey around with the human brain, regardless of what his stated intentions are. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but a lot of times, the World Economic Forum has got a lot of very benevolent reasons for why we will own nothing and be happy. If you listen to their words, they're all about the betterment and the happiness of mankind and the sustainability of our beautiful planet. But we know behind those words are bad, bad, bad intentions. I'm just saying, I don't leave Elon Musk off of that list. We'll see how it all turns out. For me, no Neuralink. See you tomorrow.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.